On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Question for you. What do the Harlem Globetrotters, Arkle, the glorious Gael Jack Doyle, and Harchester United from Sky One's Dream Team all have in common? The answer is that they have all appeared at Tulke Park, the stadium on the Richmond Road in Drumcondra, which had floodlights installed before Wembley, let alone before Dalymount Park. But as Shells are preparing to move to Phibsborough, where they're going to be in a ground share now with Bohemians, there are all kinds of questions around the future of Tulke Park. There's even a Save Tulke Park campaign. So it seemed like a fitting time to explore the history of a ground where so many memories were made. And who could be more fitting to discuss that history than our own Donal Fallon? Donal, good to see you again. Of the great 20th century Irish memoirs pay homage to Tulke Park.
Yeah, Tulke Park, Johnny Giles, and a brilliant, brilliant memoir. One of my favourite books, A Football Man. And what a title, actually, for Johnny Giles' memoir. A Football Man. He describes Tulke Park as a spiritual home for me. And then Eamon Dunphy, in his own really excellent memoir too, The Rocky. It's a bit like Oasis and Blur, you know, Dunphy or Giles. But in his own
they
memoir...
They like each other.
Yeah, unfortunately for the other, they both wrote excellent memoirs, which I hope they can admit. But Eamon Dunphy in The Rocky Road, he talks about being born 20 yards from Tulke Park. But I think these two great memoirs of 20th century football, you know, while they're amongst the best penned anywhere, perhaps when it comes to soccer in Dublin, only eclipsed by Peter Sheridan's recollections of growing up in the city. I think this is really beautiful. He says, soccer was Sheriff Street, that's all we played there. Soccer was working class, soccer was ballet, soccer was skill, soccer made sense. Soccer was Manchester United, soccer was the Busby Babes, soccer was the Munich air disaster, soccer was grief, soccer was joy. Soccer was the past and the present. Soccer was Drums and Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers and St. Pat's. Soccer was Tulke Park on a Sunday. Soccer was life itself.
That's
and,
lovely.
You know, my apologies to Giles and Dunphy, two maestros of the game on and off the pitch. Mm. But, you know, nothing for me touches Sheridan's recollection there.
Soccer is also UCD versus Cabinteely in the N11 derby. But, you know, there are some Dublin teams who will always be overlooked by this sort of romance. For a long time, and I suppose it's probably ironic given that Shells are going to be heading there, Tulke Park was often in the shadow of Dalymount.
Very much so. And it's interesting, isn't it, that Sheridan even includes Tulke Park, you know, in that. Because if you're having that kind of romantic look back at soccer in the city of Dublin, in the collective memory, it's always Dalymount, isn't it? You know, it dominates the floodlights, well, just dominate Phibsborough.
If you talk to anyone, if you said, right, where did Johnny Giles say was a spiritual home for football growing up? There'd be very few people who would immediately guess Tulke, because they'd all say Dalymount, wouldn't
Absolutely. They? Absolutely. And even in Dalymount, the hoardings say it, that it's the spiritual home of football in the capital. And, you know, it's long been thought of as Dublin's most historic ground. We talked about it a few weeks ago on the slot, when we're looking at Archibald Leitch, the godfather of the modern football stadium. But in its own way, you know, the redevelopment of that ground, of Dalymount, and the relocation of Shelburne there, it's a good time, I suppose, to look at Tulke. And what we discovered is a stadium with floodlights predating not only Dalymount, but Wembley, which is incredible. Mm. And when they played the first floodlit game in Wembley, actually, it was only the last 15 minutes of an England game. can you imagine being there and then in the last 15 minutes, these incredible big lights just come on and lift the game? But a pitch that has witnessed some of the greatest athletes of human history and horsey history, as we'll hear, and the rest.
Nothing is more English than having the first floodlit game in Wembley with only 15 minutes under lights. It's like one of those day and night, one day international cricket matches where they deliberately delay the end so that you got floodlights in Edgbaston or somewhere. Although many of the League of Ireland clubs have been and gone, perhaps the fallen giant of the game was another team that played in Tulke, which is Drumcondra.
Yeah, there's certain teams, you know, who just disappear without a trace, like Dublin City Football Club, who sold more jerseys than anyone because they were sponsored by Carroll's and sold in Carroll's gift shop. But the Drums, Drumcondra, were a powerhouse.
That's the most Celtic Tiger thing there was of any of them, really, isn't it? The idea that there was like a brand new startup team. I know it had historical links, but a startup team that sold jerseys through tourist gift shops and then just folded without a trace.
Incredible.
Very quickly afterwards.
Like Tulke Park, for me, will always be synonymous with the Drums, as they were known affectionately. A dominant force, really, in Irish football, the 40s and 50s. And for a long time, the real Northside-Southside derby, as it were, in the 40s and 50s, was not Bowes Rovers, but Drumcondra and Shamrock Rovers. Mm. They've got a couple of honours. They were the first Irish team to secure an aggregate win in Europe over a Dents. But they played some amazing teams in their day. Bayern Munich, Atletico Madrid. And at one point, they were managed by Christy Giles, father of Johnny, as respected a man as any in the history of football in this city. But they were kind of more innocent times, to be honest, in Tulke Park. Johnny Giles recounts in his memoir that the lifestyle of the Drums players would not be recommended by sports scientists today. After a match in Talca, for example, the players and, of course, the manager, his dad, would all pile into Fagan's pub to drink and to talk football. And there's an even better yarn in Paul Rouse's History of Irish Sport that when the members of the Drumcondra team complained of being overcharged for drink in a Munich nightclub, they had their passports confiscated until they paid the bill. This was a competitive European football match. So it was a different time. You know, Drums, they may not have been the superstar athletes that we know today, but you know they were Irish footballing heroes. And you know, in a time when the English game was still kind of a novelty that we heard on the radio, you know, great characters like Jackie Carey were radio stars, not television stars. Talca Park was the home of this great team, the Drums.
To be fair, it is 2007 since the last time that I was in a Munich nightclub on a very late night in Erasmus, but I know even still then, if you were a tourist, they did confiscate your passport until you paid. It was just their way of making sure you didn't do a runner after drinking the place dry, which I'd imagine was actually a surprising concern for Irish exchange students, but there you go. There was widespread bemusement though when Drums decided to introduce floodlights into Irish soccer, but they were pretty revolutionary in their own way.
Floodlights transformed Irish soccer, and there's a great book about the League of Ireland published I think about a decade ago, and it's called Just Follow the Floodlights, because that's how you find the ground when you're travelling to an away match. Try and find the floodlights. And Drumcondra made history by playing the first soccer match under floodlights in Ireland, March 1953, or I should say in the Republic. And when you think about it, floodlights, I mean, they changed the lives of football fans and football players. They allowed greater flexibility in match arrangements. You know, players could have jobs and in different capacities. 3 p.m. Sunday was always set in people's mind as football time. You played a match at 3 p.m. on Sunday. But now Drumcondra had the ability to play games during the week, you know, in the evening time. And the Evening Herald proclaimed that perhaps in 10 years we shall have the choice of a night at the pictures, the theatre, or a soccer game. Maybe the daylight game is on the way out. Who knows? So it was Drums owner Sam Prowell who brought in the first floodlights into Dublin. And then 2 years later, 2 years, which is, you know, a long time. Harold Wilson said a week is a long time in politics. 2 years is a long time in football. 2 years later, England play Spain under floodlights in Wembley for 15 minutes after they'd done it in Talca Park.
It's amazing to think that humble old Talca was so far ahead of Wembley as far as that goes. It wasn't just football that was played in Talca, though. And Prowell's time saw some fairly odd events, including, and I can't believe I'm saying this out loud, the fact that the Harlem Globetrotters played
incredible.
In Talca Park.
I was amazed, actually, researching this, how far back the Harlem Globetrotters go. They're almost a century now in existence. So you have these remarkable, and maybe we should say remarkably odd, events at Talca Park. And I think really what they reflect is Sam Prowell's kind of entrepreneurial spirit and his desire to keep the place profitable and sustainable. I wouldn't say keep the place afloat, to be honest, because Talca floods on occasion with the River Talca right beside it. But May 59, the Harlem Globetrotters performed there on a spring
that's
court.
That's decades before they even played in Harlem.
Oh, it's incredible. A spring court that they import for the event. And they play against this unimaginatively named San Francisco team called the Basketeers. But it's all in the name, the Globetrotters. I mean, they're literally an international exhibition side. They never lose. I mean, they lose one game and there's pandemonium when they lose. I mean, they're meant to win. And they're, you know, kind of accidental global ambassadors for Black America. They played 9 games in Soviet Russia in the same year that they visit Drumcondra. So they're barely competitive, you know, show-off exhibition matches. And Dubliners in their thousands see them in Talca Park. Then there's Jack Doyle, amazing character, the gorgeous Gael. 20,000 plus people go to see him there in 1951.
I'm going to interrupt you and say that you must be a pretty good boxer if they still refer to you as gorgeous. Because generally speaking, if you're involved in any competitive fights, you are no longer gorgeous afterwards.
Absolutely, absolutely true. And it's hard to disagree. Rory Croke, great young sports writer, he says that the once great heavyweight boxer Soprano and not so great actor from Cove County Cork was well into the downward spiral that would ultimately lead to his death and destitution, a long way from the bright lights of London and New York, where he became one of the most famous celebrities of the age. But even though Jack's career was, you know, on the way out, we came in our thousands, 20,000 plus to watch him. But I think the strangest appearance by an athlete on the Talca Park pitch outside of association football was a champion on four legs, Arkle, fresh from his third Cheltenham Gold Cup win.
He
parades around the pitch at half time, accompanied by a giant inflatable bottle of Guinness, because the advertising lore had it that Arkle actually consumed Guinness before competitive racing. And many people will actually remember the graffiti that popped up around Dublin in the 60s, Arkle for president. But they parade Arkle around Talca Park in 66, which just must have been an incredible thing to see.
So that's the glory days of the 1950s and 60s. We fast forward to the 80s and Irish soccer isn't quite in the great place. And then there was even some doubt about who would even play in Talca.
Incredible things happened. I mean, the decline of Irish Irish football is nearly as remarkable a story as the meteoric rise of Irish football in the late 19th, early 20th centuries. And by the 70s, things are really bad. I mean, Drumcondra go out of existence, in their original form at least. And then there's a lot of questions around what should happen. You know, can we have a Talca Park without Drumcondra in it? And it's probably reflective of just how bad things were for Irish football in the 80s, that it becomes synonymous with two of Dublin's original titans, both ringsend clubs, Shelburne and Shamrock Rovers. Mm. Shells take the long-term lease on the ground from 89, but Rovers owners, the Kilcoyne's, actually tried to move the club there earlier in the same decade. There was actually a boycott of Talca Park by Rovers fans who were really, really angry at the idea of losing Milltown.
Yeah.
And the only memory, actually, that the Rovers hardcore of a certain vintage have of Talca Park in the 80s is picketing outside it at the turnstile gates. They played games in front of dozens of fans because the boycott was so effective.
We must at some point again get you to come back in to talk specifically about Shamrock Rovers' departure from Milltown, because I know that's something that even some Rovers fans to this day are still a little bit scarred about. Even as the ground went into a lot of kind of physical decline, the Ollie Byrne era at Shelburne did bring back an awful lot of excitement.
Yeah, and there's a lot of emotional attachment for Shelburne fans of a certain vintage in Talca Park, because it's synonymous with a really exciting time in the club's history. Who could forget the Ollie Byrne years, the incredible rivalry that developed between St. Pat's and Shelburne. It really blossomed and it opened Dublin football up once more. And the ground and its stands, especially the very distinct Drumcondra stand behind the goal, for me, it's just great memories of 1990s football in that. It was a really mad time. You know, you had Pat Dolan and Inchicore rebranding Richmond Park as the Stadium of Light, which is...
Fair enough,
bold advertising move, and then you'd Ollie over in Drumcondra.
Maybe it was a nod to the floodlights.
Yes, but these were giant characters. Mm. I mean, these were absolutely giant characters who brought real excitement back into the Dublin game, and there was a kind of air of madness to it all too. I mean, you had, forget the Harlem Globetrotters, Harchester United.
I was there. I saw Harchester United play in Talca Park because we were big fans of Dream Team, and I went and they played an exhibition game, but they filmed it because I think there was some plot line where Harchester United were in the final qualifying round for the Champions League and they were drawn against Shelbourne of Dublin and I think they went through on penalties after one of the Shelbourne players comedically scuffed a penalty well high over the crossbar, like leaving Roberto Baggio proud of his effort. That's what it was.
I watched some of the archive today and just like thousands of Dublin kids in these purple jerseys. Absolutely remarkable to see. But you know, Shells...
One Meath kid in a purple jersey as well.
I still have it. Shells are there now long enough. I mean, they've got their own lore around the ground. And the great Dermot Bulger, one of our greatest writers, he actually includes a Talca Park pitch invasion in his novel, A Second Life. So it's going to be a hard thing, you know, for a lot of Shells fans to leave it. But the physical decline of the ground, I think when you walk into Talca Park now, it really strikes you immediately. You know, the slow but steady decline, kind of chipping away at the four stands.
Yeah, it's sad that the home of ground, I know it didn't physically host the Deportivo games in the 2004, I think, or so, because they went to Lansdowne Road, but the team that was playing at that level, that was only half an hour away from Champions League group stages, that's what its home has come to. The Save Talca Park group has been very vocal in recent weeks, but the future of the ground is very much up in the air.
Yeah, and I mean, it's remarkable the Shells are moving 1.5 miles up the road to Phibsborough. It was a very, very close Dublin derby when it was there, but it opens up a lot of discussion on just what should happen to Talca Park. And if it's no longer home to Shells, the question is, well, what is it? Does it have a future? The ground predates Shelburne. You know, can it survive after they move to Dalymount? And then now you have this Save Talca Park campaign. They're insisting that, quote, an amenity which has been in the community for nearly 100 years should not be sold to private developers. Mm. But the other argument is,
it's Dublin, there's need for housing. It's a prime plot.
The sale, the redevelopment of Talca, they argue, you know, it's vital to the restoration of Dalymount, the progression of the game in the capital. But it would be a great, great shame to lose a place of so many memories and a link back to the days of drums and what was, you know, the golden era. As Johnny Giles captured it so brilliantly, the golden era of Irish soccer.
I should just mention, by the way, if anyone is more interested in going back over those Shelburne glory days, Owen Brennan did a brilliant documentary for News Talk a couple of years ago, which is still available to listen back on newstalk.com. Never ignored Ollie's Reds, and it's the incredible story of Ollie Byrne and his tenure at the helm in Shelburne. Very much worth listening back to on newstalk.com. Donal Fallon, thank you as ever, Donal Fallon.
Hated, adored, never ignored. Sums up Ollie Byrne perfectly.
What more would you want? Donal Fallon, who is the author of the Come Here to Me blog and books, and the author of, one more plug,
The new book, 40 in Henrietta Street, From Tenements to Suburbia,
available in all good bookshops and some terrible ones as well. He's also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast online. Donal, as ever, thank you very much.
On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.